Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, November 12th, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
25 MDCT youths and a photojournalist are arrested in Harare after riot police and protesters fought running battles in the city center today.
It's about the continued perpetration of violence against us as the MDC family from the ZANU-PF thugs.
Outgoing United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton describes President Mugabe as the Lion of Africa, but says his government has not done enough to warrant the lifting of U.S. sanctions.
Sanctions are not the central issue here. The central issue are the policies enacted by the government of Zimbabwe, whether it's land reform or the way the law is enforced.
And opinion remains divided over First Lady Grace Mugabe, who some believe is being groomed and pushed to take over from her husband when he retires.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The 25th Movement for Democratic Change youths and a photojournalist were arrested in Harare today after riot police and protesters fought running battles in the city center following an unsanctioned anti-ZANU-PF protest. Patricia Mdadigwa has details from the capital.
The youths from the Morgan Tsvangirai-led MDC were demanding security sector reforms and an end to inter-party violence that they are blaming on ZANU-PF and the police for allegedly failing to rein in ZANU-PF youth and supporters. The youths defied a riot police barricade and moved from Julius Nyerere Way to Kwame Nkrumah, where they clashed with another group of riot officers. Freelance television journalist Shadrick Manyere was arrested while filming the protest, and the MDCT says 25 members of its youth assembly are behind bars following the protest. Nyandoro Bridget, Harare Province Deputy Information and Publicity Officer in the MDCT Youth Assembly, told Studio 7 while she was hiding in a city shop that the MDC youths were egged by escalating violence in the country and could no longer sit and watch.
Okay, the reason why we're demonstrating basically is because of the economic hardships that we're facing as a country and young people. And also it's about the continued perpetration of violence against us as the MDC family from the ZANU-PF thugs.
Nyandoro told Studio 7 that if the police did not rein in the ZANU-PF youth wing, which they blame for the re-emergence of political violence, then the MDC would be left with no choice but to retaliate.
Our plans for the future is to continue to fight for a better Zimbabwe. We are facing police brutality, but I tell you, a hungry, unemployed person is the angriest person ever, so we are going to soldier on, police brutality or no.
Denford Ngadziwore, Harare Province Secretary General, told Studio 7 that the MDC does not trust what he said was the partisan police force, hence the demand for security sector reforms.
The police and the ZANU-PF, they are one, the same thing, which means that we are now ready and geared up to defend ourselves.
Ngadziwore said the MDC youth will not be deterred by today's arrests.
The Zimbabwean youth, they are the most affected ones. There is a high rate of unemployment, so there is need for us to stand up and confront this regime.
During the past weeks, there has been an upsurge in inter-party violence, where the MDC youths have been clashing with ZANU-PF youths in Harare South in particular, but only MDC members have been arrested. The arrested youths are being represented by attorneys from the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights. It is not clear when they will appear in court for initial remand. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
Outgoing United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton today said the restoration of property rights, rule of law and respect for court decisions are some of the policy changes the Zimbabwean government must undertake for America to change its sanctions policy on the Southern African nation. Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Speaking at a breakfast meeting with journalists, Wharton said while the situation in Zimbabwe has improved, not enough has been done to warrant the removal of the so-called targeted sanctions on President Robert Mugabe and members of his inner circle. He said Harare continues to ignore court decisions, violate people's rights, and has not compensated white commercial farmers whose land was expropriated more than a decade ago by the government.
The implementation of the indigenization law has remained hard to predict, and it seems to change from time to time. And that has a chilling effect on an investor's willingness to put money into a country.
Wharton said the targeted sanctions, which affect 106 individuals and more than 60 companies in Zimbabwe, were not really an issue, adding a lot depends on the country's policies.
Sanctions are not the central issue here. The central issue are the policies enacted by the government of Zimbabwe, whether it's land reform or the way the law is enforced, or tolerance for political violence. Those are the things that have driven this economy up or down. And sanctions are sort of a sideshow.
The outgoing ambassador said the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act, ZIDERA, under which the sanctions were imposed, clearly spells out what Zimbabwe must do to have them lifted. But he said the U.S. president could use his discretion to scrap the measures if the situation improves. ZIDERA said Wharton also provides for American support of Zimbabwe's debt relief efforts, adding his country has done so by supporting the International Monetary Fund Staff Monitored Program and Zimbabwe's debt relief plans with the International Monetary Fund.
First of all, that we have supported the IMF staff monitor program here. Publicly and privately, we've supported that. And secondly, at the big meeting in Lima last month, we didn't bang our shoe against the podium and say no, no, 1,000 times no. We were supportive of that as well.
Wharton said Zimbabwe could boost agricultural production and revive its economy by giving title to landholders. He said clarity on the country's indigenization laws is critical as this would help attract investment to the country.
The implementation of the indigenization law has remained hard to predict, and it seems to change from time to time. And that has a chilling effect on an investor's willingness to put money into a country.
Also key in lowering foreign investors is political stability, Wharton said. He said the U.S. did not support political parties in Zimbabwe, but supports processes and principles of democratic elections. Wharton, who leaves Zimbabwe after a three-year tour of duty, said he had done a lot to improve relations between Harare and Washington, adding the number of people on targeted sanctions had gone down by 25 during his tour of duty.
I've also been able to achieve high-level meetings between both government of Zimbabwe and U.S. government officials and between private Zimbabweans, that is, business people particularly, and high-level Americans. So I feel like there's progress there. I think Washington has a deeper, more nuanced understanding of this nation.
He said Zimbabwe is a bright future, adding its economy could grow by 10% annually in the near future with the right policies in place. He described President Robert Mugabe as a lion of Africa, a leader who had liberated his people and fought apartheid through the frontline states, now the Southern African Development Community.
Robert Mugabe is a lion of Africa. He has dedicated his life to creating a free and independent Zimbabwe. He's one of the leaders not only of Zimbabwe's liberation movement, but of the frontline states that helped bring down apartheid in South Africa.
Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Zimbabwe, in partnership with regional financiers and the African Development Bank, today concluded a two-day inaugural experts meeting on inclusive growth, investment and poverty reduction. Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa officially opened the meeting yesterday, calling for more investor-friendly policies from the government. Mr. Mnangagwa also said prospects for Harare are looking good as international financial institutions are showing a willingness to engage Harare. Economic Planning Minister Obet Mpofu tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that engagement is key in resuscitating the economy, adding the meetings were an eye-opener.
These are meetings that we have been hosting, starting with one where we launched the diaspora policy, followed by a delegation from Australia of top Australian business people, and then we have had visitations from China and many other African and global investors, you know, who seem to be warming up to our situation in terms of investment. And yesterday's meeting was one of the biggest conferences where intellectuals from around the globe, business people, researchers, and no opinion leaders attended to deliberate on issues of importance to Zimbabwe as well as to the world.
Issue that some investors were raising is that Zimbabwe is not investor-friendly. They are pointing to the indigenization law. How are you explaining that to them?
We are also, as part of our deliberations and through these engagements, asking investors or potential investors to tell us what it is that makes them feel Zimbabwe is not attractive compared to other areas where they've invested in. And some are actually coming forward with very, very progressive views, and they are giving precedences elsewhere, and we are dealing with those issues.
That was Economic Planning Minister Dr. Obet Mpofu speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Bulawayo.
The debate on the administration of corporal punishment has taken a new twist after Chief Justice Godfrey Chijausiku weighed in following a case in which lawyers are arguing that it should be abolished. The lawyers base their argument on the new constitution. According to a report in the state-controlled Herald newspaper, Justice Chijausiku decried the abolition of corporal punishment, saying this may lead to moral decadence amongst the youths. The debate was sparked by a case of a juvenile sentenced to a caning for rape in which the Constitutional Court is being asked to confirm the judgment passed by a High Court judge. However, one of the lawyers arguing for the banishment of corporal punishment, Tendai Biti, also the president of the People's Democratic Party, told Studio 7 that other countries have long done away with this kind of punishment.
The report in the Herald is not very accurate. When you argue a case, judges ask questions. So it doesn't mean that a judgment has been written. But obviously, the Chief Justice statements did not appear to be very favorable to the idea of protecting children. The issue here is that we have got a brand new Zimbabwean constitution, which in Section 52 guarantees the security of the person and says no one should be subjected to violence from public or private sources. So we are basically saying at this first stage that corporal punishment, which is the practice where upon conviction of a juvenile, an under 18 chap, he can be sentenced to whipping, is barbaric, and cannot be found sitting in a modern democratic society.
Parents should also not be seen caning, according to the new constitution.
Quite a few parents will say, look, I can give moderate chastisement to my children. I personally grew up and my mother used to hit me. So a lot of parents will say that. But in our society, every Zimbabwean knows of a kid subjected to serious abuse by a stepmother, a stepfather, or an uncle, and so forth.
That was Attorney Tendai Biti. He's also the leader of the opposition People's Democratic Party. He spoke with Studio 7 from Harare.
Some Zimbabweans attended a climate change conference in Harare today amid reports by UNICEF that 11 million children in eastern and southern Africa, including Zimbabwe, are facing hunger due to one of the strongest El Nino weather phenomenon in decades. Journalists, civic society representatives, politicians, state officials, and other stakeholders exchanged ideas on how to handle climate change and the impact of the current El Nino weather pattern, which will continue in 2016. In a statement, UNICEF said the El Nino will cause droughts and floods, resulting in untold suffering among children who will be vulnerable to diseases like malaria, diarrhea, cholera, and dengue fever. Our correspondent Mavis Gama attended the one-day conference organized by the Coalition for Market and Liberal Solutions. She spoke to Elisha Moyo, climate change researcher in the Ministry of Environment, about global warming and related issues.
Issues of adaptation, how we can access means of implementation for adaptation, that is the finance, that is the technologies. How can we make sure that we access some of the credit lines, the grants that are issued by different finance mechanisms so as to enhance and help us to manage climate change. Right now we have this season which is expected to be having generally below normal rainfall season. But we need irrigation facilities. We need other means of adapting to climate change, but also to mitigate to climate change issues.
We are also experiencing the effects of climate change.
Yes.
Do you think the communities understand what is happening?
The communities, part of them, they understand, but there is need maybe for more awareness. There is need for more efforts in educating the communities, but also learning from what they are doing. Most of them, they have their indigenous knowledge systems. They've been adapting. So to learn some of the strategies they've been using and possibly replicate them in other communities who are not may not be aware of those. So there is need for that interaction with the different communities.
Has there been specific researches to find out at what level the effects have affected us as a country?
Yes, there have been quite a number of research work by different organizations in different areas. These have been covering issues of water, availability, the rainfall patterns, and other survival strategies.
That was Elisha Moyo, climate change researcher in the Ministry of Environment, speaking with Studio 7 in Harare. El Nino is not caused by climate change, but scientists believe the weather condition is becoming more intense as a result of it. We will give you more details on this and the impact of El Nino in Zimbabwe later in the show.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metom Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
a close look at climate change with Gibbs Duwe.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A court in Moscow has convicted a former policeman and sentenced him to 13 years in prison for passing state secrets to the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency.
The World Bank and UN groups that track maternal mortality report maternal death rates have fallen by 44% since 1990.
And Chinese police still routinely use torture to extract confessions from criminal suspects, Amnesty International said today, despite Beijing's recent criminal justice and legal reforms.
As mentioned earlier on, the El Nino weather pattern is threatening millions of people in Africa and beyond, with fears that Africa will experience severe droughts and floods in eastern and southern Africa this year and in 2016. Scientists say El Nino is caused by the warming of the Pacific Ocean and not climate change, though some believe that this weather condition may be intensifying due to global warming. Some politicians in developed nations like America dispute such school of thoughts, saying climate change is a natural phenomenon and not largely driven by human beings. For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Duwe reached Professor Peter Mandi of the National University of Science and Technology and Vumani Ndlovu of Communities Empowerment Trust. Professor Mandi starts by explaining what El Nino is all about.
The El Nino is an oscillation event in the oceans off of the southern Pacific. It's used to predict some consequences in the weather, especially rainfall amounts in southern Africa and Australia. So when there's an input of warm water in the El Nino, then we're predicting lower rainfall in Australia and southern Africa. And that's the case this year, apparently.
Now, let's turn to you, Mr. Ndlovu. Do people understand what this El Nino is all about in rural areas?
People in the rural areas are not well versed about this. It's too technical for them to understand. And this is exacerbated by the fact that there is no education that has been carried around this subject. So I can certainly say that there is no adequate understanding of this phenomenon in the rural areas.
Now, Professor Mandi, what could be the impact of this El Nino effect in countries like Zimbabwe?
We've had this before, and it's a lowering of rainfall, therefore towards drought amounts, such as in Bulawayo, it would be, as we're predicting this year, around 400 millimeters of rain, and possibly with a mid-season dry period, as happens with low rainfall in January. And this in particular means those people who are growing maize will not get a harvest.
Mr. Ndlovu, are the communities actually preparing for this kind of phenomenon?
I cannot say exactly that they are preparing because there is no adequate understanding of this phenomenon. What I can perhaps say is that the consequences of this phenomenon relate to food shortages. As you might be aware, that according to the UNICEF report, that the number of people in need of food is expected to reach about 1.5 million. In Zimbabwe. So these are some of the dire consequences of this. But to say that there are preparations that are taking place to cap the effects of this, I might not be saying the truth, because people have no clear understanding of it.
Professor Mandi, it seems as if UNICEF is saying an estimated 11 million children are at risk from hunger, disease and lack of water in eastern and southern Africa as a result of a strengthening El Nino, which is also causing droughts and floods in some parts of Asia, Latin America and so forth. So, but is there any way that the world may actually tackle these kind of problems? We know that this is an issue to do with the natural weather patterns.
Yes, I don't know about the world, but of course the first responsibility is with the Zimbabwe government. And in terms of crops, we have a Ministry of Agriculture, which I'd like to say is useless at trying to help people, like Mr. Ndlovu is saying. There's no dissemination of information or advice as to what people should do. My advice would be very simple. In an El Nino year, which this one is being predicted, you must not plant maize. You must try and use millet and sorghum, and that way you will likely get a harvest. So the first thing is, Ministry of Agriculture, where are you? And then the second thing in terms of water is we have a Ministry of Environment, Water and Climate. And again, we don't hear any advice or information coming out of that ministry as to what you should do in the event of lower rainfall.
Now, Mr. Ndlovu, many Zimbabweans usually plant maize. What is going on? Because people don't want to, you know, cultivate sorghum, millet, and so forth.
I don't think that's true to say that people do not want to plant these drought-resistant plants. The issue is that we are expecting the agricultural extension workers to get to the ground, educate people about the need for alternative crops other than maize.
That was Vumani Ndlovu of Communities Trust speaking with Studio 7. You also heard from Professor Mandi, Peter Mandi of the National University of Science and Technology. They both spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo.
Today we continue our series on First Lady Grace Mugabe, where analysts and ordinary people have been weighing in on her life and political career. From Manicaland, Lloyd Amoyo reports.
Zimbabweans from various walks of life are divided over the First Lady's role following her entrance full-time into politics. It's really a mixed bag, but in Manicaland, most people like James Mdenda of Padare says Ms. Mugabe is not as popular as some in a party would want her to believe, adding a presidential bid will not succeed.
Her coming into politics recently, by virtue of her being married by the president, people respect the president, people respect her because of her being married by the president. That is where the support is. Suppose if she was not a first lady, just like any ordinary citizen, the question is, will she be enjoying the same support she is getting, the same respect she is getting?
There is belief among many in the country that the first lady is gunning for her aging husband's position to protect her family interests, resulting in fissures growing in the ruling party ahead of its annual conference in Victoria Falls. Mdenda says the first lady's road to the presidency would not be as easy if she decides to become a contender.
There is a belief in ZANU-PF where the ZANU-PF people believe this country can never be ruled by a woman.
Coordinator David Mutambirwa of the Mutare Residents and Ratepayers Association says in his point of view, the first lady, despite her work with orphans and the disadvantaged, does not have meaningful support from women in particular to warrant ambitions for the highest office in the land.
There is no support, as far as I'm concerned, which is associated with Grace Mugabe. Apparently, she's only enjoying the structures which are being manipulated in order to perpetuate into power.
He says the entry of Ms. Mugabe into active politics has so far seen many casualties within a short space of time, a thing that may work against her in the future. But the political activist and Mutare resident Eve Charengwa is the point that Ms. Mugabe can get what she wants as long as Mr. Mugabe is still around and supports her.
She can get the highest office as long as the husband is still alive and she has been mentored or modeled or she can be elevated to that because of his husband's support.
Mutare lawyer Pasmonya Kureba concurs with Charengwa.
Am I Dr. Grace Mugabe? One must remember that she is the secretary of the Women's League in ZANU-PF. And if you go to the history of her ascendance to that post, it was a popular rise throughout the provinces of ZANU-PF and throughout the country. She received immense support from ZANU-PF women in ZANU-PF. And also that support that she has among women is enough for her to rise and ascend to the office of the president of this country or vice president if she so wishes. So I think that support can never be doubted. It is an unwavering support. Wherever she has gone, you have seen all the women in ZANU-PF converging there.
Mr. Nyakureba says the first lady is capable of becoming the country's next leader, adding the only thing needed for her side is the ambition.
In the urban area, so she has got a critical mass of people that can propel her to that position. But in addition to that, she has also managed to gain support among critical elements of ZANU-PF, that is its structures and also other pillars that support ZANU-PF, like the war veterans, the division, there are those who support here. If you go, there are even allegations that among the securicos, she also has got support. So she has got enough support to ascend to any office that she wishes to do, if she so wishes.
With so much happening in ZANU-PF, only time will reveal the first lady's real plans. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Damoyo.
Thank you, Lloyd Dam. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts on the Women's Forum will look ahead to Christmas with the South African rand continuing to fall. What will it mean for Zimbabweans working in Africa, Chris?
Yes, Junga. People can text us at 001-202-465-0318. And now to recap today's top stories.
25 MDCT youths and a photojournalist are arrested in Harare after riot police and protesters fought running battles in the city center today.
Outgoing U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton describes President Mugabe as the Lion of Africa.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Tebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And this is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.